Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is Derek Specht.
Hello.
Derek.
Good day, sir.
What's happening?
Not much, just busy. Looking forward to doing some new trips this summer.
Our whole tripping summer fall thing has all been turned around right now.
Yes, I heard.
Anyway.
Plans have changed.
You got to go with the flow. Things happen. Things that affect the family happen.
And yeah.
People move to Japan and stuff like that.
When is the move?
August.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, beginning of August. Hokkaido.
Nice.
Yeah. I think 2 years.
Wow. Very cool.
There's some good paddling opportunities in Hokkaido.
Have you checked into it already?
No. Why would you think I would do something like that?
Where's that...
Hokkaido.
The white water. Where's that white water... they build the... It's like just a bunch of trees. You sit in the middle of it.
Oh, the train fall, of logs. The down the canyon. The logs down the canyon. No, that's south of Tokyo. Total other end of the country. Southern end of the country.
So,
guess
Hokkaido's
how
in the
I know
end?
That. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're like a day's drive from that.
Yeah.
25 hours, I think it is. Mind you, only an hour from Sapporo.
Huh?
Brewery. yeah, so we're not sure what's happened this year, so we'll find out.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, go with the flow. Gotta do what you gotta do.
Everybody's wondering, what in the heck are they talking
about?
Yeah,
my daughter's moving to Japan. So our in-home babysitter for the dogs, the cats, and everything else is out the window.
She taking the cats with her?
Nope. No, apparently we are house-sitting them for 2 years or longer.
You gotta make sure you make a trip over to visit.
Well, that's why I was looking into stuff, because maybe next year.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty amazing over there.
It's $2,500 a person for a flight there and back.
There is that. It is expensive. I took the long, slow route.
I'm going to swim. Be cheaper.
Pretty much
swim. Yeah, I'll start now. Get there in time for next year's paddling season.
I was there when I was in the Navy. We sailed over. We did Incheon, Korea, Sendai in Japan, and then I can't remember the place in China we went, but that was kind of cool. It was a cool trip. We were in Sendai, is near-ish Tokyo-ish.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so this is way up north.
Yeah.
But apparently it's supposed to be a really beautiful country up there. Volcanoes, mountains.
Yes.
Lots of
outdoors. It would be amazing to see. And so just as long as that... Right now, anywhere's in the world, I don't know if you've been watching the news, but it's doesn't matter where in the world, there's a major problem with tourists and tourism.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of places, like, what is it, in Greece, there's active protests and people are spray painting tourists go away. And
really?
Yeah, yeah. People are, like, tourists are rude, right?
Well,
come in rude.
Depends.
Like, in there's a town near Mount Fuji. In Japan, the tourists cause such a problem when they gather and they're trampling people's flower beds, taking pictures of Mount Fuji.
Is that the one with the grocery store? They're taking a picture of the grocery store, something like that, and Fuji's like right behind it, but they're killing people's property, trying to get pictures.
And so the town has put up a giant fabric wall to stop the photo taking.
Yeah.
And tourists are already cutting holes in the wall to... slicing holes in the wall to take their photos. Yeah, and it doesn't matter where you go. You're like, we're talking Greece and Portugal and like
the tourists. It depends on the tourists.
Yeah, it's a major, it's turning out to be a major problem. Like when you have the locals in a town that are like, enough's enough, like how bad is it?
As much as they love that tourist tax dollars.
I know. But can you imagine trying to make the tourist tax dollar go away because it's just not worth it?
Anyway, we'll see what happens. Maybe we'll end up over there doing a couple week paddle somewhere along the way, and doing some sightseeing. And because how often are you going to go to Japan?
It's not often. No. I really enjoyed it. It was an amazing trip. Yeah. Got to we did a lot of walking around and just like late at night, just wandering, and it was really cool. You go to these little sushi markets and the treadmill with the food that rolls back past you.
Oh yeah,
sit there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just cool. I want to hop on the old Hello Kitty bullet train.
Yes. that would be cool. I would love to be on one of those boats. Those things are like four.
No, this one is like themed, like Hello Kitty.
Yeah, they do that.
There, you can go on a, like, even the inside is all, there's a tourist shop and everything on the train.
Yeah,
not that bad. I want to go on a bullet train to get me places faster. I don't care if it's just pure white walls. Like, just get me there. Anyway, other than that, I was going to mention something. I can't remember what. Oh, you were talking about Audible books.
Yes.
You were reading some space book thing.
Yeah.
You know what I just finished? I'm actually almost finished reading. Is a four-book set, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Ah, right on.
Yeah. The four of them. I'm just on the last one. But yeah, I haven't heard.
Written word or audio?
Audio.
Yeah.
I listened to Working Back in Rush Hour Traffic.
Okay.
So I started about a month ago. Now I'm almost done all four books. It's a lot of time in a car.
Yeah.
But speaking of time in the car, we went for a drive this weekend.
Yes, we did.
Where did we go, Derek?
We went to Peterborough.
And what did we do when we were there?
I don't remember. It was so long ago.
We went to the donut shops.
No, actually, hey, we should have.
Yeah.
We should have.
Donuts. I ought to start getting a map with all the donut shops. I just put a pin in the map every time I go to a donut shop in different towns, different drives, except Bancroft. Bancroft is crap. I'll just put an extra Bancroft. But, I should start doing that. We went to the Canadian Canoe Museum.
Yes.
The brand spanking new museum.
It opened May 11th, I think. Yes, May 11th. Yeah. So they had the grand opening on May 11th. And so we finally managed to make it up there. And it's pretty amazing to see. I didn't know what to expect. I need to go back again because I think it was just kind of, it was busy.
Do you need to go by yourself or with people that are just going to sit there and read everything,
look
at each thing, discuss a couple things? Because we got sort of distracted. Oh, look at this thing, and look at this thing, and look at this thing, look at this thing. But there was some pretty cool stuff there.
There's quite a few times where I spent a lot of time just waiting to get your attention because I wanted to show you something. It's like, are you going to look this way or what?
I am reading. let's start with the building. The building has a cool look to it. It's metal, but it's rusting.
It's and then a big over time, metal box.
Yeah. Apparently that patina comes out and totally changes it, and that's what they're going for. But
you
gotta make it look like garbage before it turns into that beautiful looking building.
It's unpatinaed in some spots. You can see it's just naked metal. It's just rusting, and there's some areas that are rusted more than others. But it's a very interesting looking building. It's a big metal box, basically.
Yeah, but it's going to change how it looks outside over time.
Yeah,
I did like some of the little tweaks they put in the building itself, like the rain spouts come down, but they're built into the wall, and then down at the bottom there's this little spout that comes out, and there's a little strainer on it for in case any garbage comes from the
leaves
the
and stuff to stop it from filling up the weeping beds and stuff.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So it's neat, because like you can see where they're kind of hidden inside the wall, but then they kind of pop out, and it's like it's a very unique design. I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah. Nice big lobby when you walk in, and there's a cafe right there as well.
Yeah.
And
cafe, gift shop, front entry, desk. There's a workshop. There's some utility stuff. It's pretty neat. It's pretty amazing when you first walk in. It's very big and open. Like you're looking 2.5-3 stories up or whatever. It's like it's a long ways up. It's quite the massive place. Oh, the front windows. When you first walk up to the front of the building, like you have
The big doors.
The big doors and the windows above it have the Great Lakes on it.
Yeah.
It
looks etched, but I think it's just a fine a decal.
Yeah,
a
white something.
Decal, so the light comes through, so
it's really
the
cool.
Great Lakes.
Yeah.
When you walk in there, you see you got that, and the wood workshops, like the room where they do the workshops, like carve your own paddle and stuff like that is right there. And you go up the stairs, there's a big window that you can look at the large storage racks filled with paddle craft, which we thought was really cool, except for one thing.
It's not lit.
They need to turn the lights on.
Yes.
You know, you got all these boats out there that you don't have access to, and they're all in the dark.
So I was thinking about that since then, and what I think, and I'm usually pretty right about stuff. But
I'm always right, except those times I'm mistaken.
So they would have LED lighting, which is even worse for the blue spectrum lighting and ultraviolet. But I imagine they keep the lights off to protect the all those stored boats.
Because yeah, some sort of light that they can have on, just even if it's dim.
Even if it's diffused,
because they're so far back, you can't even see half.
It's the size of the building. So the 2/3 of the building on the main floor is storage for canoes, mm-hmm. and then there's the entry, the gift shop, and the restaurant cafeteria, and right straight above that is a banquet room and some kitchenette and other workshops and whatever that are employees only. And then the 2/3 of the upper floor is all display.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting that way. It's a giant building.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting the way it's laid out, the way they've done it. And there's lots of opportunities for, well, they've got 3,500 boats.
Tons.
So they have a lot of boats, so they would be able to switch out their collections and put new displays on. You can see that there's some work in progress.
Oh, yeah.
They need to, like, one thing that I think they could do is, or do better, is when you're reading a display, it talks about a certain boat. And its design. It's like, well, which one of the four boats in front of me are they talking about?
Yeah, there
about?
Was the skin-on-frame kayaks one. And on the bottom it says, you know, number one built in whatever year in this area, number two, number three, number four, number five. And then you're looking at the boats, but there isn't actually a number
on the boats
that we could see that denotes which one is one, which one's two.
Yeah.
I got to think those are probably the small details they have yet to finish.
Yes. And there's a lot of small details. You could see that they are not fully
100% finished.
Yeah. I'd say they're about 96%.
Yeah.
There's a lot of small details. Like there's a lot of landscaping stuff still going on. I imagine next year at this time, it's going to be done.
Completely.
Yeah.
I got to think a lot of it's going to be done by the time summer's in full swing.
Yes. But it's just the fine tune, like anything outside, because there's a lot of area that they've created some parkland and mm-hmm. you can see that they've created these, bulrush, creeks and
little pond they're doing.
Ponds and there's a giant dock down there and there's a couple old, those giant canoes, like a Voyageur style canoe.
Yeah, they got a couple of those. You can also bring your own canoe in that and launch.
Yep.
They have the adaptive canoe and kayak launch section on the dock.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I should mention, we met at one of our longtime listeners there, Dave Wellington. He came out to join us and we walked around there and chit-chatted with him. Nice to see him again. But between all of us, after going through the displays upstairs, and there is a lot of good boats that were up there. Like we saw, Bill Mason's canoe.
Yes.
We saw Gordon Lightfoot's canoe, Pierre Trudeau's canoe, Adam Van Couverden's, kayaks from the Olympics and that, and Voyageur canoes, like canoes going way, 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 way back.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's pretty cool. And all these just little different displays sort of just flowed in.
It was
to one
cool.
another.
Like you mentioned Pierre Elliott Trudeau's canoe. So it's there. One thing that I remember from the old canoe museum is they used to have a big glass display. And so Pierre's
buckskin jacket,
paddle,
gloves,
rucksack, gloves. Yeah, it was a whole display. It was all on loan, so it wasn't theirs. But they only have the canoe. They might have the rest. They just didn't haven't
the
figured out a
way. The
volunteer
we talked about wasn't sure if the rest was there.
So maybe they haven't figured out how to display it yet, or maybe it was reclaimed. Who knows? But yeah, so it's interesting. I think you're going to see a lot. There's a couple empty cases that we saw.
Wonder Woman's invisible canoe.
Yeah, Wonder Woman's invisible canoe. Yeah, there was that display case. Yeah. Yeah, you could see where there was tape on the walls where it was saying that map of this goes here.
Oh, and there was somebody's quote, and I said, we should get a marker and write, hey, where's my quote? And then sign her name on it.
Yes. So there's a few things that need to be polished, but it was, overall, it was well worth it. I'm glad we went and checked it out. Might try and I'm going to get the family up there. We'll stop and do dinner in that little cafeteria thing they have there. It looks the few people that we saw eating this there. I saw two people eating this salad, and it was like, oh, that looks so good. It was like a chunky salad with giant croutons, and I'm like,
a good old chunky salad. Nothing like a good old chunky salad. I always
it just
say.
Looks so good.
Yeah. Oh yeah. like I say, I mean, they're not 100% finished yet, but overall loved it. Definitely be heading back. Probably bring the canoe next time. I mean, we knew it was going to rain anyway. Yeah. And as we were heading out to the docks, it started spitting. So, canoemuseum.ca if you want more info on it, and, go check it out. Cause I know we'll definitely be heading back again.
Yeah. Oh, and parking. So we just kind of pulled right into the...
Oh, yeah.
It was mostly empty. We got there early. Not a lot of people were there. So we pulled right into almost the front door and parked. And so there's room for about 20 or 30 cars on that side. But across the street is the main parking lot, which also shares parking space for the Ball Diamond. So it was early on, the parking across the street was full because there was a ball game going on, but it's a large parking lot. So if you're looking for parking, it's right straight across the street. Yeah, they have your own crosswalk and stuff. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So definitely we'll head back up against it later this
summer.
And
in that area, there is a park just to the south of the museum. And so this park, there's lots of stuff, hiking trails, biking trails, and there's a lot of canoe trails. So you could launch your canoe at the museum and canoe through all the canoe trails that are in that area. And you're pretty much downtown Peterborough, and there's a lot of area to canoe. It's a very
big
nice
lake is there.
Or kayak, but there's a lot of area there to play on the water as well.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually going to talk. Actually, we might as well do that now while we're here. Let me just skip ahead. Since we're talking about that area, Lock and Paddle.
Oh, yes.
Remember, we did that a couple years back.
I did it once. You've done it like four or five times.
Before COVID, they did a nighttime one.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really cool. So Parks Canada's Lock and Paddle event has brought canoe and kayak enthusiasts together at the Trent Severn Waterway National Historic Site in Peterborough, being the Lift Lock. And this July 20th, the event is taking place at three locations for the first time. Ottawa's Rideau Canal and Montreal's Lachine Canal is joining in. July 20th, Montreal Lachine Canal Historic Site, Lock 3. Ottawa's Rideau Canal National Historic Site, Hartwell's Lock, and Peterborough Trent Severn Waterway National Historic Site, Peterborough Lift Lock. Cost? Free.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course.
Gotta like that. They say it's best, Lock and Paddle is best described as a flash mob or critical mass of canoes and kayaks. Visitors of all skills and backgrounds are invited to come together, pack the locks for this one-day event celebrating these historic treasures. Paddlers from all around will travel to be part of this unique show. Most people wear colorful clothes and even decorate their canoes and kayaks. Now, when we did the nighttime one, we decorated all in lights.
Yeah.
So there's all these canoe and kayaks going up the river to the Lift Lock, all lit up and,
cool.
Right and whatnot. And then when they all came out, you know, you see all these boats going down with lights, and that was pretty, pretty cool. This year's event takes place on Parks Day, July 20th. Attendance is free of charge. The usual locking fees will be waived. Registration isn't necessary, but if you're planning on booking a canoe or kayak from a rental company for the event, we suggest doing so in advance. And for those that own their craft, don't forget to bring it with you on the big day. I wonder how many people, hey, let's go for a paddle. I forgot my boat. I forgot my boat.
I keep forgetting my boat. I have to go get my boat from Johnny's Paddle Shop. Johnny's Boat Shop.
Pitter patter, buddy.
They're going to wonder if I'm ever going to pick it up.
Right? Well, guess what we just got? We now own a boat.
They've had it since last fall.
Yeah, time to get it. All participants are required to wear PFDs, and the only boats that are permitted are kayaks and canoes. Stand-up paddle boards are not allowed.
I think it's because it's too unstable.
Yeah. Parks can't, and it gets really...
It gets tight. A lot of people.
So if somebody falls off their board and they're going to have a problem getting out. Parks Canada recommends bringing items such as a water bottle, sound signaling device, bailer, and a watertight flashlight. Well, those three things are required
anyways.
Event is rain or shine, so be sure to dress for the weather. Pack your rain jacket, sunscreen, and a hat. Historically, hundreds of people have participated in the Peterborough event. 2023, more than 400 canoes and kayaks were present, with more than 600 people in attendance. This year's turnout is expected to hit record highs with the spectacle occurring on Parks Day. That's a lot of boats.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing it at three spots now, too. So, Trent Severn Waterway National Historic Site is home to the 65-foot hydraulic lift lock, the world's tallest, so paddlers will be in for quite a ride. While the locks at the Rideau Canal and the Lachine Canal aren't quite as high, they still promise gorgeous scenery and plenty of excitement. And a note to Peterborough paddlers, don't forget to stop by the new home of the Canadian Canoe Museum on Little Lake, part of the Trent Severn Waterway. More information on all three lock and paddle events can be found at parks.canada.ca. I think we'll try to see if we can get into that one again this year. Like I say, we did the evening lock and paddle a few years back. It was pretty cool. I think the overall consensus was they should do a nighttime one again.
Mm-hmm.
Or hold it twice.
Yeah.
Hold a daytime one and a nighttime one.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like I say, seeing all the boats decked out in lights, and some people had like to put a pole up in the middle to make it almost look like a sailboat with the lights coming down and around and all that sort of thing. And yeah, it was pretty awesome. So there is that consensus, I know, to do a nighttime one again. So, and yeah, if you're going up, go check out the Canoe Symposium while you're there. The Canoe Museum. I don't know. I got the symposium on my brain all of a sudden. Canoe Museum while you're there, and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Enjoy it. Make a whole day of it, and then some.
Yeah.
What else we got here? We got a whole lot of things to talk about. Well, some of them seem big, but they're not really. Navigating. So, how long have we known Randy? He goes by the nickname Raccoon.
Yes.
And I don't even know where that came from.
Randy Raccoon.
He's a Randy Raccoon? No, it's Ricky Raccoon.
No, it's Randy. Is it?
It's Ricky. Oh. Ricky Raccoon.
I thought it was Randy Raccoon.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah.
So we've known him from, it must be 25 years or something like that, from paddling Algonquin.
I knew his brother Ken. Better than, I knew Ken. I didn't really know Randy.
Well, he sends me stuff every so often. He sent me this one, which I thought was interesting, because I don't think people really touch on it a lot. It was an article from paddling.com. They say, even though kayaks, canoes, and stand-up paddleboards don't take up much space, they still need to follow the rules of the water. We talk a lot about the portage etiquette and stuff like that and being safe on the water, but we don't really talk about...
It doesn't come up
traffic.
Much.
On the water,
it doesn't really come up much because when you're on inland waterways and stuff, you're not really fighting for navigable space with other types of watercraft.
But we noticed it when we did the Trent Severn. All those chains of lakes and everything going up through there.
Yeah, a lot of people speedboats trying to dump
boats
us
and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It says you have to follow the rules of the water. This means yielding to most boats as well as similar-sized vessels coming from certain directions. By following the same rules other boats obey, you keep the waterways organized and free of chaos. Yeah, I keep chaos off my water trips.
Yes.
I keep chaos into my regular life and away from my paddling stuff. Time and place. If you are paddling a trip to another country, you might wonder if the same rules apply, and if not, how you should navigate these unfamiliar waters. When paddling in a foreign country, following the same general right-of-way guidelines will help keep you safe. Yield to larger and faster boats and all motor and sailboats. Also yield to boats approaching from the right. Stay out of the busy channels and instead stay along the shallow coastline when possible. Ask local experts about local practices. Consider taking a guided tour to learn more. When it comes to navigating waters with heavy boat traffic, remaining patient, calm, and alert are all important. Regardless of where you are, showing common courtesy and common sense will help get you through most hairy situations in busy waters. So they're talking about, you know, when you're going away to some other country, I mean, be it just to the United States or over to Europe or something like that, and you want to, hey, you know what, I'm going to go out and do some paddling for the day or something like that, and what do I need to know, what do I need to do, and, you know, you're seeing all the boats coming out of a harbor sort of thing if you're, like, in the Mediterranean or something like that. So there's the rules. Now, this was sort of done towards kayakers again. Everything's done towards kayakers anymore.
Well,
typically... Ah, screw them.
But think about it. Typically, canoes are going to be enclosed waterways, creeks, rivers, and stuff like that. But whereas kayaks are more lake and ocean going, yes, and whatever. Yes. So you are going to miss...
Well, my I got to see touring kayak, which, yeah, you know... So yeah, this one is geared towards kayakers, but it's realistically you can use these for your other boats as well. Number one, always yield to larger vessels. First thing I think is, well, yeah, I'm not going to win that fight.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One rule that every paddler should know is that he or she must always yield to larger vessels. Therefore, regardless of your position, speed, or trajectory, if there's a bigger boat coming into your path, you must yield. This is a practice you should always perform when paddling, and it is particularly important to follow this rule when paddling abroad. If you yield to larger boats and leave plenty of space, then you will avoid any potential collision, and you won't anger any locals.
Yeah.
Two, anything with a sail or motor has the right of way. In addition to size of the boat, you should also consider the type of boat that is coming into your space. As a rule, sailboats have the right of way in most situations. This is because they rely on the wind and are more difficult to steer. You should also yield to power boats, even if they are smaller than you. I don't know any power boats that are smaller than a canoe or a kayak. Like even a like an aluminum boat. Maybe they're just talking length. But yeah, I still looks
the little pickle fork things, yeah, and just little runabouts.
Pickle fork?
Yeah. It's a you ever see the deep ocean high speed go fast boats?
No.
And they've got two sponson things out like pointy things on the front end. There's the round nose ones, the pickle fork ones.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I've probably seen it, I just never heard
yeah,
that term.
Yeah, there's smaller ones. So me and a couple of buddies, when I was living out west, five or six of us got together, where we bought plans and built a boat. And we didn't build the pickle fork. We built the one with round nose.
The only pickle fork I know is when I'm having a sandwich at the deli, and I use the fork to get the pickle.
Well, just think of a boat with like your two fingers like that. It's just there's two keels coming out of the front of the. And usually you see these kind of boats for one of these deep ocean races where they're going like 100 miles an hour.
Okie dokie.
Bouncing off waves.
Well, even if they are smaller than you, you should yield. You have to yield to them. This is because they are most likely going significantly faster than you. So it is smarter to yield to a fast-moving vessel as they will clear your path quickly rather than forcing a motorboat to slow down and wait for you.
Mm-hmm.
They can just wait. Yeah, because we've seen in a lot of things over the last couple of years, and even from first-hand knowledge or experience, they don't wait. There is no waiting.
Yeah.
If you're there, they're going past you or over you.
Yes, exactly.
Number four, stay out of the boating lanes. This is a big one. As an unwritten but important rule for paddlers to follow whenever possible is stay out of the boat lanes and channels whenever possible. And the other thing you got to think about is some of these places you're going, there's big boat traffic. Like, we're talking tankers.
So, yeah, here in the Great Lakes, there's main channels that come out of the docks going from lake to lake.
Yeah.
So there's an entry channel and an exit channel, and you really should stay out of those. These big ships, they don't navigate and turn
they
that well.
They can't see you.
They're just going to run you over, and they won't even notice.
Yeah.
And so you stay out of those channels, stay close to the shore.
Yep.
And especially like if you're open ocean stuff like Bay of Fundy or Nova Scotia, there's main channels come in and you're talking big tankers.
Yeah, you don't need to be
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you don't need to get in their way.
One of the greatest benefits of a paddling vessel is you can paddle in a foot or two of water. Almost no other boats can do this. Therefore, it is best to use that space so you never have to compete for your place on the water. Channels and boat lanes can get quite crowded, and larger boats that draw a lot of water need to use them so they don't hit the bottom. Therefore, a small paddling boat blocking the passage of one of these boats is bound to lead to some frustration and possibly a honk from a boat captain. Mm-hmm. Nothing like a honk from a boat captain, I always say. Number 5, yield to those on the right. If you're paddling around canoes, kayakers, and stand-up paddle boarders, boats the same size as yours, you should always yield to those coming from the right. If a boat is approaching you from the left, you have the right of way. If it is coming from your right, allow them to pass. This is a general rule, especially in the United States, when it comes to the right of way for all boats. It can be different in other countries, so inquire before paddling into busy waters. I think a lot of this, I would just stay away from the busy waters regardless.
Until you get used to it, like until you become familiar with the rules of navigation, just like driving on the road with a car. Yeah. Until you learn and get your G1 driver's license, it's like, don't be messing around. Like go drive in a parking lot until you learn how to drive.
Stay on the back streets.
And then you can go on the 401 after you get some experience.
Keep to shallow areas where boat traffic can't go. As mentioned, most larger boats need to stick to the designated channels to avoid a collision with the bottom. As a paddler, you can hug the shoreline. This might mean some extra distance, but it will provide you with increased safety and is bound to be less stressful paddle. Furthermore, hugging the coastline often provides you with excellent wildlife viewing opportunities and is usually a more interesting experience.
Mm-hmm. And if you're in the shallower waters, you're out of the main shipping channels and the main travel, so you're going to avoid some wake.
Yeah.
And some of these big ships can make some big wakes.
Yeah. I mean, there's chance, like I say, when we went up the canal, there's a couple of narrow channels and stuff like that where you have no choice,
mm-hmm.
right? But even coming in and out of the locks, like if we were in the front, we knew come out of the lock and immediately head to the side.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't think there was ever a time that we came out of a lock because they tried to get us up front, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there was ever a time we came out of a lock that somebody was so impatient to pass us.
Yeah, never.
They knew we were going to go forward and then head over to the side so mm-hmm. that they could just when they got out of the lock.
Yeah.
Everybody was really considerate that way. But if we would just continued on straight, that consideration would not be long-lived.
Yes. They'd be honking at you.
They would be honking at
us. Get out of the way.
Cross busy channels when no boats are approaching you. Sometimes you have no choice but to cross a channel or waterway that is commonly used by large boats. If this is the case, timing is everything. It is similar to walking across a street with fast-moving cars and no stoplight. Take your time. Don't rush. If you see a boat approaching, even if it looks far away, wait it out. It's best to proceed across when there is no one approaching from either direction. After all, many channels have currents that can make paddling more difficult, which in turn will cause you to take longer to cross this busy zone. So you may think, okay, I'm just going to zip across, and then you get hit by the current, and it could be taking you sideways towards the boat that's coming right at you.
Yes, exactly.
So that boat's going to reach you a lot faster. So don't be impatient. Take your time. Go with the flow. Do maritime rules of right-of-way vary in different countries. If you travel and like to paddle in different iconic paddling destinations worldwide, you might wonder if the rules of the sea vary based on your location. This is a complicated answer, but generally speaking, the common sense rules listed that we already talked about should always be followed. If you follow these guidelines, then you're keeping yourself in a safe position regardless of how the rules of right-of-way apply in different countries. There are many countries where there seem to be no rules at all, just instinct and reaction. And we've seen this. If you've ever kayaked in southern Thailand, you have seen hundreds of long-tailed boats narrowly colliding with each other as other kayakers try to bob and weave around them.
It's chaos.
It is absolute chaos. You look at that and you're thinking, there's no way I would be out there. Somebody would come up next to me and smack me with a paddle or something. It is best to avoid these congested and dangerous situations, especially when you don't know how other boaters and paddlers will act on the water. It's similar to renting a car in a foreign country. It is best not to start things off by jumping into rush hour traffic in a major metropolitan area. Or going to Iceland for the first time and every other intersection is a roundabout.
Oh.
Let me tell you, by the time we were done that
you're trip experts.
I was an expert at roundabouts, let me tell you. I didn't even need to slow down.
I would add one more thing to the navigation thing. And this is a rule that I use. It's if you're ever out anywheres and you see any houseboats around you, chances are, 99 times out of 100, that's a rental, and they have no clue what they're doing. So avoid houseboats on the water.
Yes.
They honestly don't know. They generally, along the Trent Severn, there's rules. You're not allowed to drink on the Trent Severn. But if it's any other waterway, chances are there's not enough patrols to keep these people from drinking and boating and whatever. And a lot of these people.
And how many people follow those rules? It's a houseboat.
Yeah.
It's a pontoon. It's not like I'm going to, tip over.
But it's a lot of these people will, it's the one opportunity. Hey, let's rent a houseboat this year. They'll be on the houseboat for a week on the Trent Severn or somewheres. And they don't know the rules.
Yeah.
They get a light briefing at the start of it saying, this is how you navigate. This is, just like we went through these rules. That's what they get. They get a half hour spiel about how not to run into people and things. And
Do you have to have your boater's license in Canada to rent a houseboat?
I don't know.
Because I know we take an aluminum boat out.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the day I got mine, because we were saying, we'll just chance it, not get it. But I got mine anyway, and we went out fishing for the day and got stopped by the OPP.
Oh, yeah?
And my father-in-law, because it was the two of us, and took my son Mackenzie out fishing for his first time in a boat. And they pull up next to us, because there was a big bass tournament going on the lake.
Oh, okay.
And he pulls up, and just look on his face like, oh, crap. And they're going, hey, can you see this? And I just whipped out my wallet, and he's looking at me like, you got to be kidding. Yeah, beer's on you tonight, buddy. But, I kind of think you got to have some sort of.
When I rented a houseboat 12, 15 years ago, I think that was before they started coming out with these boater cards.
I got to think you have to have some sort of boater car. I mean, it doesn't take long to get it.
So we rented way up north, like way up north.
Oh, so do you have one? No, that's okay. I won't tell anybody.
We didn't see other people. We were on this northern waterway. I can't remember. There's a hydroelectric project there, but yeah, the Rolly, he had two houseboats he rented. We rented one of them. We were out there for like 12, 14 days. And we just motored down one way and then motored back. And
was that before kids?
Yes,
it was. Those were the days.
Me and Siobhan were childish. Yeah. Childish.
You still are, buddy.
Childless.
I hate to break it to you.
Childless at the time.
Childish.
But my buddy and his wife had their kids along. They had their four kids there. So it was a blast. It was a lot of fun. Did a lot of fishing. you know, it was a blast. But yeah, I don't recall him asking us if we had any certification to drive the thing.
Yeah. But like you say, if you happen to be paddling around in your canoe, kayak, stand up paddleboard, whatever, if you see a houseboat coming, left turn, Clyde.
Yeah.
7 tips to help you safely navigate boat traffic abroad. Number 1, go with a tour on your first paddle.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Right, like I mean, when we were up in Iceland, I thought if time allows, I'd hunt down a tour and go for a paddle. Time didn't allow, but yeah, I wouldn't have just gone out without any information out.
Yeah, about because it, right? Chances are you're in open ocean.
Yeah.
Tides, waves, currents. I don't know if there's any internal waterways you could really paddle on.
There was a few spots.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But majority of it, like you say, mm-hmm. is out there. When you aren't certain about paddling rules and etiquette in a new place, it's best to travel with someone who is. Traveling with a guide or on a tour is a great way to learn the rules of the road in new waters. A guide can tell you all about the area, give you tips on what areas are crowded and which are not. You can ask your guide all the questions you might have had about paddling safety in the area. Additionally, guided tours are a great way to get a lot of information about an area quickly. Right? So, you know, oh, yeah, I want to do this, I want to do that. Oh, you don't want to paddle here, you want to paddle over there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, the local information about the best places to go and see and...
Consult a local professional, which is sort of like the first part, but if guided tours aren't your style or if hiring a guide is out of your budget, you can still ask a local expert for some tips. If you're renting gear in a new place, you can usually get helpful tips for the person from the person who runs the shop. It's a good idea to read reviews before renting paddling gear, and when doing so, try to find a shop that is known to have helpful employees. Sometimes a few questions and a quick rundown of the area is all a paddler needs to safely navigate waters abroad. The other thing nowadays with social media, when I'm looking at stuff in Utah, there's all these paddle groups.
Yes, yeah.
So you can just send them, hop onto their join their group and say, hey, I'm coming from here to here. Does anybody? And there's times where people will say, hey, if you're going to be here, let me know because we'll come out and... Mm-hmm. join you for a paddle or something, which is perfect because if you're into that sort of thing, you zip out there and so you got a local person that will take you around and you're not having to pay for a guide and you're not having to pay for this, that, and the other thing. You got somebody that knows the area and come out with you.
Yeah. And just like, there's a couple of kayaking groups that I've joined just because of Alan. And, so there's I don't know how many different kayak groups, but they're constantly posting, hey, there's this kind of a paddle. We're meeting here at Cherry Beach, and we're doing this. We're doing that.
A harbor paddle.
Yep. So if you know you're going to be somewheres at a certain time, some place foreign, then you find a local group and just start watching their patterns.
Yeah.
Because chances are you're not going to, decide, oh, I'm going there tomorrow. You're going to be planning 6 months out.
Yeah. And if you know they do a group, you could also drop somebody a message going, hey, I know you guys plan these groups. I'm coming for whatever.
Yeah.
Could I join
these dates? I'd like to join some locals to see what's the things are to see in the area.
Yeah. To follow up with that, number 3, do your research. Don't simply rely on the kindness of strangers.
True.
Make sure you research the area where you are paddling. Look to see if there's motorboat traffic, and if so, how much. Check the tides, see how low tide affects channels. Doing this research will prevent you from having to make difficult and spontaneous decisions while you are vulnerable in your paddling vessel. So, yeah, as much as it is to say, hey, we're going to go here, go there, awesome, set up your date or whatever, but don't just rely on their know-how. Check things out for yourself as well. So you sort of get an idea of what you're in for. Stay away from busy bays and harbors. As a kayaker, it's always a good idea to avoid any busy port, like downtown Toronto, where a lot of these people are, right? This is especially true if large ships are going in and out. The bigger the ships, the bigger the wake. Also, some large ships might have trouble noticing you, and they can't adjust their course easily. Try to find a calmer launching point. If you can't, make sure you choose the least busy time of day and paddle close to the shoreline. Number 1, that's why we go from Cherry Beach. Number 2, That's why you and I were able to launch at midnight. Please, busy time.
Yes, yes.
Number five, make sure you can see clearly. When you're navigating new waters, your eyes are your most important tool. You need to make sure you can see the bottom and see everything around you. This means a good hat and even better sunglasses. Use UV-filtered sunglasses that are also polarized. Sunglasses that can see clearly into water. A quality set of polarized lenses should do. They are essential when you are paddling along an unfamiliar coastline. Number six, and this is a lot, goes everywhere, is you need to make yourself easily seen. There are many ways you can increase your visibility, from the color of your kayak you choose, the type of clothing you wear. Wear bright colors and some reflective materials when possible. If you plan to return near dusk, it's always a good idea to have several light sources. So I've got the lights that I can put on either end of my boat.
Mm-hmm.
I got my headlamp. I got my yellow life jacket. I used to have that really, really bright orange one you could see from space.
Oh, yes, yes.
That everybody used to tease me about. So just make sure that you're seen, because like the brighter you are, the better chance of a boat that comes zipping by can see you.
They can see you sooner than later, yeah.
Number seven, the final one, is carry a communication or signal device. Just like a car has a horn to alert other drivers, every paddler needs a sound device. A whistle or horn is a paddling essential, especially when you plan to navigate around lots of boats in a new country. Best way to avoid a collision is to see others and be seen by others. Some good points there.
Mm-hmm.
Summing up navigating your paddling vessel in foreign waters. If you plan to paddle in a foreign country and are wondering what the rules right of way are, remember that yielding to larger and faster vehicles is universal. It is always a good idea to stay out of the boat lanes and busy channels, no matter what country you're in. Instead, stay in shallow waters where most boat traffic can't go. If you're nervous to paddle on your own or in a new country, consider joining a group tour or getting some advice from the company you rent your gear from.
Yeah.
Randy, thanks for that article. There's a lot of good stuff in there. Like I say, we don't always talk about this sort of thing. We're talking about boat safety and, you know, that sort of thing. But we don't actually talk about, well, when you're actually out there.
Yes.
And what do you do when you're with all the rest of the boats and everything that are around you and watching out for traffic, right? Mm-hmm. And the other etiquette we talk about is just like portage etiquette in the backcountry.
Oh, exactly. Right? Yes.
So,
yes.
So this was a good article. Thank you very much, Randy.
It brings to mind, I was watching a YouTuber, and he lives in New York, and they got themselves a couple kayaks, and they were going to, was the East River, the Hudson, whatever it was they were crossing, they just, hey, let's go, let's paddle over the other side. It didn't take long for the Harbor Patrol or whatever the police force is on the water down there to take notice. And boy, were they mad. The cops were like, get off this water. You're not allowed out here. Because it's a main shipping channel. And
right.
There's so many ferries and so much traffic and whatever. People in kayaks are just not welcome in whatever area they were at. And it's like, know your local area, because you know, if you're putting yourself in danger for one, and for two, it might be not permissible.
Mm-hmm. Well, funny you should mention.
Okay.
Because I'm now just, you know, going through where our story timeline is all willy nilly now.
Story time.
I came across an article on the Hoboken Girl website.
Look at that. I walked us right into that one.
Right? That's what I'm saying. It's like perfect. Speaking of. With summer on the horizon, it usually means trips planned to the Jersey Shore, if you're down that way, and beyond for many Hoboken and Jersey City locals. But what some locals, as well as residents who are new to the area, may not know is you don't need to travel far to enjoy time on the water this summer. In fact, you don't need to travel or pay at all. Thanks to the beloved nonprofit, the Hoboken Cove Community Boathouse, locals can enjoy free kayaking and paddleboarding all summer long. Locals can enjoy free paddle boarding and kayaking right in Hoboken. Is it Hoboken or Hoboken?
Hoboken. Hoboken. That's what they see on in movies.
Yeah, thanks to the Hoboken. Because I want to just say it faster.
Mm.
But I think it's Hoboken, not Hoboken.
Yeah, it's Hoboken.
Hoboken. Thanks to the Hoboken Cove Community Boathouse, this local nonprofit organization is run by volunteers. The boathouse's mission is to provide free water sports programs and access to local waterways for all residents. The boathouse works in conjunction with the city of Hoboken to provide opportunities for locals to explore the water. That's pretty cool.
Hmm.
More than 6,000 paddlers get out on the Hudson via kayaks and paddle boards thanks to the efforts of Hoboken Boathouse volunteers. Boathouse first opened back in 2004, making this their 20th year in operation.
Wow.
Right? These are things you don't know about until you hear. Since the Boathouse is a nonprofit organization, access to the New Jersey Waterway is completely free. If you choose to take the Boathouse up on one of the many water-friendly events and activities it provides throughout the summer, you don't even have to pay to use the equipment. Donations are accepted and widely regarded as the kind of thing to do for an organization that gives back to its community so much. That's like when you go into the visitor center at Algonquin Park. They got that big round. Remember those things you used to be able to put your coin in and roll it, and it does the whole tornado thing, and then falls into the big pit of money sort of thing. And then they got the box that you can put money donations into.
Yep.
Same sort of thing. So yeah, it's free, but you know, we do accept donations of, hey, well, here's $10 or $20 or whatever. You know, even giving $20 is a lot cheaper than it would be to actually rent.
Oh, exactly. Right?
So due to popular demand, donations can also be used to secure a reservation for kayaking and paddle boarding through the boathouse. That guy is kind of like, hey, here's $20. What can you do for me? The limited reservations can be secured with a $10 donation. Oh, $10. What can you do for me? However, the reservations are not necessary. They are simply helpful on days where there is a long line at the boathouse. The reservation slots are released 4 days before each paddle day. If no times are shown when you click on the booking page, that likely means all spots for the day have already been booked. So when they're coming out, you got to pretty much be on it, I think, to get what you want. The Hoboken Boathouse also provides tours for paddlers known as the Public River Trip. Participants follow a tour guide down the Hudson River, taking in the views of the New York City skyline. So if you go to their Facebook page or their Instagram page, like there's, can't remember what it was now. But yeah, go to their Facebook page, Instagram page. Like they're in this little cove and like you're seeing New York City skyline across the river from you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, this is pretty cool looking to be paddling there, right?
Yeah.
The river trip is generally 1 to 2 hours long and is described as a bit of a workout. While no prior paddling experience is required, trip leaders run a short paddle test before leaving to make sure all paddlers are comfortable in their watercraft.
Maybe that's why it's a workout, because it's newbies.
That, and there's current and all that sort of stuff, right? Public river trips generally run on a lottery due to the program's popularity, and a reservation is required. According to the website, kayak traffic is generally slower in the morning. Participants must be 18 years of age and up and know how to swim. But yeah, I came across this, and I'm starting to look at the pictures and stuff like that, and you wouldn't think something like that right where it's located and the scenery that you're getting there. Like I mean, it's all city skyline you know, the New York City skyline. And I think it's right across from Central Park. Like if you look at the island, there's Central Park's there. If you go straight west,
okay,
that's where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Right in New Jersey sort of thing. So it was pretty cool.
Right on.
HobokenCoveBoathouse.org for a lot more information.
Very cool.
But yeah, I came across this. I'm thinking, well, that'd be kind of cool if I was down there, right? Huh. And you were talking about New York City, you know, it just sort of fed right into
this. Yes, yes.
So, There's the Hoboken Girl website and the Jersey Girl or Instagram page.
Okay.
The Jersey, I'm pretty sure it's the Jersey Girl and the Hoboken Girl Instagram pages. So you can see all the pictures and stuff like that. And yeah, it's pretty neat. What was the other, the boathouse is Hobo Cabo.
Was it on this page?
No, I'm just trying to get it from my brain. I thought I'd put them on the page. Yeah, their Instagram is, I'm sure it's Hobo Cabo.
Okay.
Is their Instagram name. But again, there's all the pictures and everything like that. So, yeah, if you're in Hoboken, we're going to be there.
Yep.
Go for a paddle. Don't even need your own stuff. I'm sure if you brought your own stuff, though, they'd probably
how
let you.
Would you?
What do you mean, how would you? Drive?
You're going to drive to New York City with...
I'm just going to drive to New Jersey.
Drive to New Jersey with a canoe or kayak on your roof?
Well, and, if you're on a tour.
I hope it's still there.
Yeah. That's a pretty stereotypical view, but I'd lock it. Yeah. No, if you happen to be crossing the country or driving or something like that, or say going to the New York Islander game or something.
Or looking for a place to donate a canoe or kayak.
Yeah.
To a local.
Just go. There you go. Last thing I've got here is a update on something we've been following for a number of years now.
Yes.
The Lake Mendota canoes in Wisconsin. So we talked about the first one they found by accident, Tamara Thompson.
Oh, yes.
And then they found she found the second one accidentally as well. I chatted with her not this year, but last year when we were at Canucopia, she was there giving a speech about it. And I had a chit chat with her about certain things. And she says, yeah, you're, and mentioned, you know, this is what we talked about on the show. Here's sort of the conclusions. And she says, from what we know right now, you're sort of going on the right course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So just a bit of an update here. This has just come out, the last week. Archaeologists have discovered 11 ancient canoes submerged in Wisconsin's Lake Mendota, suggesting a lost village was once in the area. And that's what we had said.
Yes.
If there's like two canoes there, you got to think there's, and it looks like there might be more. And you're talking about these pictures of where the shoreline used to be. Our logical thinking means there was probably a village there. And this is what, now that they're finding, They think they found 11. Depending on who you talk to, it's either 10 or 11. But the 11th one that they found parts of, they're waiting for carbon dating that back.
Yeah.
They think it's either a separate canoe or it might be part of.
So it's close enough to another one.
Yeah, so it might be part of a one, so it will be 10.
Yeah.
But if it's not, then it is actually 11.
And for those unfamiliar with it, with these canoes all being found in this area, you know, archaeologists are making their best guesstimate is that the age is like 1,200 to 4,500 years old, some of these canoes.
Yeah.
But it's typical way to, back in the day, a typical way to store and overwinter your canoe, your dugout, is to sink it to the bottom of the lake. And what it does is it stops the canoe itself from shrinking, cracking, and breaking over the winter because it's drying out too much. And so they submerge them in the mud, and it preserves the canoes. And so this was, back in the day, it was like the local knowledge. This is how you preserve your canoe when you overwinter them. Because we guesstimated that they weren't an agrarian culture. They weren't so much into farming as they were into migratory hunting.
Yeah. So the oldest canoe dates back around 4,500 years ago, making it the most ancient one to be uncovered in the Great Lakes region. This canoe, along with three others, dates back to the late Archaic period. Two date back to the Middle Woodland period, while four go back to the Late Woodland period. Amy Roseborough, a state archaeologist for the Historical Society, said, "What we thought at first was an isolated discovery in Lake Mendota has evolved into a significant archaeological site with much to tell us about how the people who lived and thrived in this area over thousands of years, and also provides new evidence for major environmental shifts over time. The remaining nine canoes are still undergoing analysis and research, but so far archaeologists think that these canoes were all intentionally put in the water to prevent their shapes from warping over the winter months. They've also discovered that the canoes are made from different wood. While the oldest is elm, the later ones are ash, cottonwood, and white oak. The most recent canoe was made from red oak. But yeah, when I was reading some of the articles, like 4,500 years ago, they weren't farming yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So they were still doing the hunter-gathering sort of,
you know. So they'd be migrating. So they'd be in that area over summer.
Yeah.
And then
sink their boats south, and then head south.
And head south where, yeah, because they'd be following the game. They'd be following the animals' boat, you know, for hunting and hunter-gatherer type society, right?
Yeah. And so it's pretty interesting that, you know, we've gone from this one that she accidentally found
yes,
to this second she accidentally found. And then they're doing the LIDAR and everything through the ice to find out what's down there.
Very
cool. And now they're up to possibly 11 with, and like I say, then now all of a sudden it's more,
extensive village type. It's a popular over summer location for hunting and whatever.
Yeah, so that, like I say, they're thinking, well, if these are here, then it's got to be. And they know from previous stuff that this is probably where the shoreline was, that sort of deal. And now the lake has risen enough that they lost their village due to rising waters.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we've been following this for how many years now? And we're going to keep on following
2021.
It. 2021. Yeah. Yeah, it's been pretty cool, so. If anything else comes from this, we'll keep updating.
Yes.
That's all I got for this week. You got anything?
Oh, I did want to mention the...
What are we drinking?
We have a Bob Cajun tonight. It's a Bob Cajun Brewing Chocolate Orange Stout called Starry Night.
I don't have one. I had one.
I still have mine. It's really good. I enjoy it.
I'm not a big chocolate orange. Like, people get those Terry's chocolate oranges
for
Christmas.
Yeah.
And I usually, thank you very much. And I pass it off to one of my kids or something. This tastes a little like bitter chocolate they use. Mm-hmm. I didn't get any orange out of this. But stout, I like. Chocolate, I like.
I can taste a little bit of marmalade type thing.
Can you?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm a pretty good marmalade connoisseur myself. I get stuff brought in.
Do you?
Yep. I love marmalade. Yeah, so if anybody wants to buy me anything for Christmas, chocolate, stout, and marmalade.
Separate,
and donuts.
Please.
And donuts. Oh, I'm not proud. Throw it all in the blender. Drink it up. That's it.
Yes.
Nothing for you, eh?
Nothing.
Oh, boy. Well, if you want to find more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook and Instagram. You can download or stream our episodes from iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or you can just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.